Welcome to the Mind of the Escapist podcast. I'm your host, Terrell. On this podcast, you'll find reviews for films and video games. I hope you enjoy it. And if you do, don't forget to follow the podcast on your respective platform so you don't miss any future episodes. And please share it as well. That would help me out a lot. Now, without further ado, let's get on with today's episode. In today's episode, we're going to take a look at the Saw franchise, and I'm going to review every single film in the franchise and then rank them. And then later on tonight, I'm going to watch Saw 10, which has just come out today, and I'm going to then review that, and that's what you're going to hear at the end of this review, and then I'm going to rank the franchise again to see where Saw 10 fits in within my ranking of the franchise overall. But yeah, in the past couple weeks, I watched the Saw franchise in its entirety. It's been a while since I watched them all. I think the last time I watched all of the films in the franchise within a short period of time would have been before Jigsaw came out back in 2017. By the nature of this franchise and how convoluted it gets, it's kind of like you're watching it for the first time in some ways. Narratively, anyway, I find that when I watch these films and I go back and watch them all, because I don't remember the story. I mean, I watched these films over the past week and a bit, and I've already forgotten some of the plot already. Like, it gets so complicated that it feels like a fresh experience in some ways every time I watch them in terms of the narrative. But we're going to talk about all of the films, like I said. Now, let me tell you about my first experience with Saw as a franchise, and the first film in particular, because I'm a big horror fan. Anyone that knows me knows I'm a huge horror fan. It's my favorite genre. It's what I watch most of the year anyway. So, like, a lot of people tend to watch horror films in October, of course. I watch horror films all across the year, all throughout the year. And I started watching horror films very young age. Before I was even 10 years old, I had seen some of the classic horror films on television, and that really started to pique my interest. And then around about 11, 12, 13 years old, that's when I really started to watch a lot of them and started to increase my knowledge of the genre. Saw has a very specific place within the origins of me becoming a horror fan and my nostalgic memories of watching horror films when I was younger. Now, the original Saw film came out in 2004. At the time of its release, I would have just recently turned 10 years old, and I vividly remember the marketing of Saw and hearing about it. Not necessarily hearing in detail about what happens in the film itself, but just hearing of the film and that it's violent. And what really stuck out to me back then and really stood out and really was the first thing I think that drew my attention to this film was the actual billboards that they put up. And what was really struck me back then as a kid, and for that same reason is why when I look back on it now, I think that's quite a bold thing they did back then, was that kind of iconic image of the foot, the severed foot or the severed hand in the Saw marketing for that original movie. They had that on billboards in my city. Like, I saw that growing up, like, on the billboard. And it's, like, kind of crazy that they had such a graphic image on display on the billboards back then. But that's what made me aware of the film to begin with. And then hearing about it. And I can't actually remember when I first saw the first movie. And now that I think about it, actually, I'm not even sure if the first Saw film was the first Saw film that I saw. I just wanted to say it like that. I'm high right now. As I was saying, I don't think it was the first Saw film that I had seen, which is interesting now because it's got me thinking, was it or was it not? I can't remember. But anyway, I eventually started watching this franchise probably in 2006, I want to say I was probably 12 years old or 11 or I must have been about 12 years old going on 13 when I first saw my first Saw film, whichever one that was. It would have been either 1, 2, or 3. And the way that this, and this is why these films are so memorable to me, because the way that I experienced those films were through either the internet, or in fact, no, back then it wasn't even the internet, it was through bootleg copies that I had on DVD. And what would happen is me and my friend, one of my friends, close friends, growing up, we were both into horror films. So whenever we would have I'd have a sleepover at his house and go to his house, I'd bring the DVD of the next Saw film and we'd watch it. And it would be a big deal to us because we got so drawn into the Jigsaw and the violence, the creativity of the traps. And it was a big event every time a new Saw film came out for us. Although we were underage, we were only 12 and 13, we were still anticipating the Saw movies every year because it was almost a tradition for us to then get a hold of the latest Saw film and watch it even though we weren't supposed to be watching it. That's the significance of that franchise to me as a kid, is that really. And that's one of the biggest memories I have watching horror films when I was younger, one of the most significant ones, is, you know, keeping up with this franchise from pretty early on, because like I said, I would have seen it. By the time I started watching them, it would have been, at the most, it would have been Saw 3 that had been had come out. So the franchise was still in its kind of early phase when I started watching them, despite my age. But that's where the significance of this franchise to me comes from, is from that early experience as a young, at a young age, of watching horror films and experiencing the Saw movies and waiting every October to watch the latest Saw film. And that was a really cool experience that I'll always remember. As the years went on, I've got specific memories of watching each film because we did watch them every single year. And then it got to a point that, you know, you came to the conclusion of the franchise, or what was supposed to be the conclusion of the franchise with the final chapter. And I remember when that released as well, and that was a big deal. Then the franchise went dormant for a long time. And then in 2017, they kind of did a reboot slash prequel thing with Jigsaw, and that was the first Saw film that I was then able to watch in the cinema, and that was like a significant experience for me, just being able to watch a new quote-unquote Saw film in the cinema for the first time, having had those experiences as a kid. So I've got fond memories of this franchise from the start of it to the end of it, and I am actually quite excited for Saw 10. I think it looks pretty promising, and it looks like a back to basics type of Saw movie that might have a little bit more going on under the surface in a better way than some of these other films. Anyway, let's talk about that first Saw film. What an iconic film. What an important film. What a landmark film in the pantheon of horror history, especially for the 21st century of horror films. Because what James Wan and Lee Whannell were able to create with this was a franchise that, for the first time since, say, Scream, had an icon. It had a brand name that was recognizable, but it also then created what eventually became an iconic horror villain. And that's not something that happens very often. And even now, even today, it's hard to come by where you get a horror film that breaks out into a franchise that has iconic villains and recognizable characters that could create an entire brand. It's kind of crazy to think of this first film, and when you watch this first film and see it for what it is and what it would have been when you watched it back in 2004, and then to see what it's become and what the Jigsaw's become in pop culture, and the fact that you could go to Alton Towers and get on a Saw ride, the fact that there's Saw horror mazes everywhere. It's kind of crazy to see how big the franchise has become, and where its origins came from, this low budget film by a writer and a director that weren't too far removed from college, I believe, at the time of making it. And it managed to spiral, pun completely intended because of the name of the other film, spiral into this big franchise. The irony of that as well is the fact that it's James Wan that did that, and then he repeated it again years later with his other films. I just want to quickly have a brief moment whilst I'm talking about James Wan to give the man his flowers, because James Wan, I think, is one of the most significant, arguably the most significant directors of the 21st century when it comes to the horror genre. And the reason for that is this man's genius has managed to kickstart and create three of the biggest horror franchises ever. What has to be the three of the biggest horror franchises of the 21st century. Saw, he created the Saw franchise. You have Insidious, another film that I remember very fondly from my youth. Another horror film. He created a franchise out of that. The Conjuring. I don't even need to tell you about that one. You know about that one. So The Conjuring, which then became a huge kind of expansive universe of horror films, something that we hadn't really ever seen before in that particular way, has become a huge mainstream hit. James Wan is very important to the horror genre, and he deserves his flowers for his contribution, because he has a very specific style of filmmaking, especially when it comes to his horror films, but he does it very well, and I don't think there's anyone in his generation that does the James Wan style of horror better than him. Like, you know what you're getting with a James Wan movie. You're getting the jump scares. You're getting the slow camera movement, you know, the build up, the suspense. You know, his scares, because we're so used to them now, they do become a bit more predictable nowadays. But that doesn't diminish what it was back when it was made and when it came out. And it's special to be able to watch this first Saw film and to kind of see the origins of what this man came on to become, and what his franchise and franchises went on to become. This is a great standalone film. And people forget, because of what the franchise has become, that this was a standalone film and it was made to be one. And it's a great one at that. It has a fantastic conclusion, one of the most iconic endings in horror history. And it's a real gut punch of an ending that really pulls the rug from under you in a way where you didn't even realize that the film was even going in that kind of direction. You didn't realize you were watching that type of movie where the film was almost playing a trick on you the whole time. But when it reveals its hand, like a magic trick, it really stuns you. Now, I should probably say spoiler warning, actually. If I'm going to talk about this whole franchise in detail, I'm probably going to have to touch upon some spoilers. Some things I won't talk about, other aspects I will. So yeah, spoiler warning for the Saw franchise as a whole, if you've never seen them. But yeah. There are going to be some brief spoilers in this retrospective review. An interesting thing you notice when you watch this first Saw film, especially for those that may have watched it much later after it released, years later when the franchise had been established, is you hear so much of what this franchise became. There are terms that I don't particularly agree with, like torture porn, that were thrown at this franchise for its depictions of violence and supposedly, you know, torturing its characters. So if you go in to watch this first film knowing what this franchise or you know, knowing the reputation of this franchise, you're going to expect something that you don't necessarily get in this first film. You get it in the rest because it was established within the rest. In this very first film, you don't get a lot of blood and gore, and you don't get a lot of violence. Yes, you have traps, some of which you don't even see fully go off, but in terms of the violence, it's actually kept to a minimum, and that's a mixture of being quite restrained as a director and as a writer, and because of their budget restraining them. But it works in this film's favor, and it makes this first film stand out in a very unique way compared to the rest of the franchise, because after this is where the franchise started to pile on the gore and the graphicness to an extreme degree, whereas this first film doesn't really have it. And this first film is like your traditional type of detective story in a way, told out of sequence with different sequences peppered in throughout. But it is an interesting mystery. And I think this film will remain a classic for its quick pacing, mystery, and its twist ending. Lee Whannell wrote the movie, and he also stars in the movie as one of the guys in the bathroom. And I thought he gave a good performance in this film, which is actually quite memorable, especially when you look at the franchise as a whole. Just want to quickly go back to the phrase torture porn and why I disagree with it. The reason I disagree with that phrase being levied at the Saw franchise is because the Saw franchise actually has quite a bit of introspection upon the death sequences. So although they are grisly traps, and there are some later on in the franchise that cannot be beaten, so they are simply there to put a person in a device to die in a horrible way, most of the kills in this franchise, whilst they can be very graphic, also have like a tale of consequence within them. And that's essentially how the Jigsaw operates, in terms of taking bad people, or people have made horrible decisions in their life, and making them value their life through the trap if they can make it through. So they receive their consequence and their punishment. When it's the Jigsaw doing it, there's always a way out. And it's all about the consequence and how you can take a bad person and almost rehabilitate them through the traps. So because of that, and having that sort of ideal that the Jigsaw operates by, I disagree with the phrase torture porn, because torture porn implies that this film's just all about strapping random people up to traps and just slaughtering them. And whilst I understand why someone from the outside would have that opinion from what they've heard and what they may have seen if they've seen clips, there is a bit more under the surface. You've got to give the franchise a little bit more credit with what it's doing in terms of the traps themselves and the reasoning behind it. Yes, it's all an excuse or a reason to get someone in a trap so you could see some sort of grisly sequence, but there is still more under the surface than just throwing random characters into a device and have them die in grisly ways. Now let's talk about the second film in the franchise, Saw 2. This had long been my favourite, and I'm not sure if it's still the case, having watched it recently. I first watched this film at a young age again, and I enjoyed the simplicity of the story with this film. So of course the first movie is very much its own thing, in terms of it's a tight-knit thriller that's within this bathroom. Two people got to try and escape this bathroom. Meanwhile, there's this other story that's going on around them, and as they uncover more about that story, they start to learn more about each other, and it all kind of comes together like a great puzzle piece by the end of it. Obviously it was a very big success. The studio wanted to make a sequel. Lee Whannell stayed on to write the sequel, but James Wan didn't direct it. And all of a sudden you got to think, okay, the studio want to make a sequel to this. There's no natural progression of this story in a sense of being able to replicate directly what we did in the first film. So they had to kind of take it in a bit of a different direction and pivot a little. So here we have the second film, which, like I said, has a very simple storyline, which is easy to kind of become engaged with when you watch the movie. And it's essentially Jigsaw has a bunch of prisoners navigating an abandoned house filled with traps, trying to find an escape. That's the basis of it. And I think that was a very simple and accessible way to experience the origins of what this franchise became. And the reason why I enjoyed it so much, and why it used to be my favorite and it still is definitely up there among my favourites, is the traps. I think the traps are really good in this film. And this is where the traps start to really break out and become this staple. Because there's not a lot of traps in that first movie. But in this one, you get a lot of them all dotted around this house. And they're memorable in different ways and disturbing in other ways. There's a pit of needles in this film, which I think is one of the best traps out of all of the films. As Amanda gets thrown into this pit of hundreds, thousands of needles, and they're all sticking into her arms. That's definitely one of the most disturbing and disgusting traps in the franchise for me, and one that kind of affected me. One of the most disturbing traps in the franchise, which really disturbed me when I was younger. There's a man that goes into a furnace and he has to collect the syringe. Basically, in the house, the prisoners are kind of poisoned, so they're slowly dying, and that's why they've got to get out of the house within like 90 minutes or something like that. And there's an antidote at the end of this inside this furnace. So the man crawls into it, and when he pulls it, it shuts the door on the furnace and it turns on, and he's essentially burning alive in this massive furnace. And that just really disturbed me, just the thought of it and his screams. And at the end of the sequence, you see him burst out the end of it, like his head and his arm, and he's all scalded and burned. And that definitely affected me when I was younger, and it really kind of stuck in my head for a long time. You've got another cool trap where the girl's got to get, I think it's a key. No, the antidote, I think, in the box. And she puts her wrists up through the mechanism in the box. And then there's blades on the inside. So now that her wrists are gone through into the box, in order to pull her hands back out, she's going to have to pull them through these blades. And that's a very gruesome one. But overall, I think the second one's a very enjoyable film and an easy film to watch, because the franchise, as it goes on, becomes very complicated and confusing in terms of its narrative. Whereas the narrative here is quite simplistic. And I think that works to the film's benefit. I do think the ending is a little forced. It kind of mirrors the original movie in terms of its ending, and I think the filmmakers think it's on the same level as the original, like the twist that they attempt to pull at the end of this film. I think they're definitely acting as if it's on the same level of shock as the first film, when it never would have been. You know, you just can't replicate that first time experience with the first film and that ending. So it attempts to replicate a similar twist in the same location, but it was just less satisfying in that regard. But if I was to recommend, you know, a few Saw films for someone to watch, number two would definitely be on my list. Saw 3 came out in 2006. I vividly remember owning this one on DVD, and that's how me and my friends watched it at a sleepover. And one thing I got to point out again, I mentioned it with the first Saw movie, but all of the marketing materials for these films, especially like the first 4 or 5 films in the franchise, really good stuff, really memorable stuff. Because the first film, you had like the foot and the hand on the posters. The second film, you had the two fingers to symbolize the two in the title. And the third film, you had like this poster that had like 3 teeth that had been ripped out of someone's mouth hanging. And that made the 3. Like, they did some really creative things with the marketing, and that's what helped make this film feel memorable upon release, and helped kind of ramp up the excitement every time a new film was coming out and you got a new kind of gnarly poster of some weird imagery. That all added to the experience of Saw in general, that as it lives in my memory. But Saw 3 is the first sequel that feels like it had more work to do in order to justify its existence and find a way to continue the story. The narrative isn't engaging, in my opinion, and it feels unnecessarily convoluted already. And it gets worse in this franchise in terms of how messy the story feels. But this is the film that truly established the formula of cycling through multiple isolated traps in one film. Unlike the second film, there isn't a group encountering the traps together, but instead there is one man who is given the opportunity to save those who are trapped through being presented with a moral dilemma and, you know, deciding who's worth saving. So the man they have tracking the people through these traps in this movie literally gets a brief opportunity to try and save every single person, but he's faced with like a moral dilemma to go along with it to help him make his decision. I like that it continues the manner in which the Jigsaw had a purpose behind who he involves in his game, so it didn't drop that and just have random people get killed. It still kind of kept its focus on having some sort of purpose within who's caught up in these traps. And the saving grace of this installment is the traps themselves. It's another set of memorable traps. This film was written by Lee Whannell. There's some great traps in here, and there's some memorable ones that, you know, once again, thinking back to my youth and, you know, discussions I would have with friends about horror and these films in particular, there were a lot of traps that we kind of gushed over in this one. And I'd go as far as to say some of the traps in this film are among the standouts of the whole franchise. There's the woman that's being frozen, there's the man drowning in pig guts, and there's the man who has his limbs twisted backwards until they break. They're the main things that make the third film watchable in my opinion, whereas I think the story itself falls a little short. But one thing I do appreciate about the ambition of the third story is, although it feels like it's creating all these elements in order to serve a purpose for why it exists, it does try and wrap up the narrative that started in the first film and then was continued in the second film between Jigsaw and Amanda and their relationship as kind of master and apprentice. It does do a job of trying to wrap that up in a way where I feel like Lee Whannell wrote it in a way where it was like, this is the final film in the franchise. We've just made a trilogy. I'm just wrapping this up, putting a bow on it, and we're done. And it does feel like that in a way, which is a positive. But then, of course, it made money and the studio wanted to make more. And that's when we got Saw 4. And that was a rhyme, unintentionally, sublime. I'm still going. I'm still flowing. Freestyling in the podcast. Anyway, I'm getting sidetracked. Saw 4 came out in 2007. Saw 4 feels exactly like what it is, in my opinion, an attempt to extend the franchise despite having no compelling narrative reason to do so. What begins as a simple story quickly becomes convoluted as it dives deeper into the Jigsaw's origin, but adding more and more layers to the point where you kind of start to lose interest in what his origin is. The opening scene where you witness a body being dissected in a morgue, and the one that follows it, which is the first trap of the film, those are the standout moments in an otherwise forgettable sequel. So that opening trap of Saw 4 is you've essentially got a man, two men strapped up to this device. One man has his eyes sewn shut, the other man has his mouth sewn shut, and they got to try and communicate with each other to try and get themselves out of this brace. But of course, due to the restrictions they have on both of them, they kind of conflict with each other. So you've got one man that can't talk, and you've got one man that can't see, so their form of communication is kind of skewed, and they essentially have to fight it out to the end. And the one thing I remember from that specific opening sequence is the shot at the end of it where the man like breaks free with his mouth from the stitching that stitched it shut, and just the blood that pours out of his mouth. Very memorable sequence. But before that, you get a very gruesome and realistic-ish portrayal of, you know, someone dissecting a body in a morgue and chopping up the Jigsaw's body. One thing I forgot to say about the third one, actually, now that I think about it, is the final shot I love of it. The girl gets her head blown off with the shotgun shells around the, like, she got like a necklace of shotgun shells, and it goes off, blows her head wide open, and the final shot of the movie is her head just looking like spaghetti. Following on from that, Saw 4 opens in a similar way where you just see the, you know, organs from the Jigsaw and all of that. Because, of course, this third film is where the Jigsaw actually dies. You find out before he died, he swallowed a tape. They've cut it out of his body and they're listening to it and it's a new game. But yeah, Saw 4 I think is just quite, I don't want to say unnecessary. I mean, it is in a way, but you can say that about a lot of them, especially after the third. But it's definitely the one where you feel like, okay, now they're stretching this. Now they're finding a reason that's not coming to them. They're more so just trying to think of a reason to just draw this out even longer. But at least the first two scenes are quite good. And it does kind of continue with characters from the first three films. So you get the black cop from Saw 2 and Saw 3. He's now tested. And I do kind of like what the Jigsaw is trying to tell this cop who's always trying to save everyone. And there's a lot of lessons for him to learn, because in a lot of the traps, particularly with the end as well, which, you know, the somewhat twist of the end of this film, is that this cop can't let go of the fact of trying to save people when they're in need. And that's what the Jigsaw is trying to teach him. And he inadvertently kills the cop who was the main cop in the second movie, who's in a trap, accidentally kills him at the end because he infiltrates the room that he's in before the timer goes out. There's this whole timer going on throughout the whole of the film that he's trying to race to save them before the time's up, because naturally you think when the time's up, they're going to get killed, but it's the reverse. When the time's up, the Jigsaw would let them go free. But because this cop is so hell-bent on saving everyone and because he didn't learn his lesson throughout the film, he busts in the door with seconds to go, and that actually kills the cop because he failed his test. Whereas if he stood outside that door and waited for the timer to go off, the cop would have been free. I do like that aspect of it. I do like that part of it, actually. And the way that that cop from the second film is killed is just by this massive blocks of ice kind of swinging down on his head and popping his head. There is some merit within Saw 4, but I do think it's the weakest out of the original four movies that came out. Moving on to Saw 5, which came out in 2008. Saw 5 is an installment that I find more memorable than most of the others in the franchise, and I think that's due to its method of deploying the traps in an escape room-like nature. It helps pace the traps, so when you're watching Saw 5, you never go too long without seeing another trap. The narrative that surrounds Saw 5 is more engaging as well, in my opinion, with its Russian doll style of plot retcons actually becoming slightly interesting. There's a particular scene in Saw 5 where the Jigsaw underlines his principles to Hoffman, and it's one of the best scenes in the film. And it's really interesting to see a man who is becoming, I haven't even spoken about him yet, so in somewhere in Saw, did he first show up in Saw 3? I think he did first show up in Saw 3, and then he really came into his own in Saw 4. Detective Hoffman, he's essentially the guy that later on in the franchise takes over from the Jigsaw and Amanda and starts doing the traps himself. There's a flashback scene of the Jigsaw and him talking, and the Jigsaw's kind of outlining his principles. The Jigsaw actually captures him, actually, and tries to teach him a lesson, outlines his principles for the traps, and why traps that give the victim or the suspect a method of escape is the purpose. Because if I remember correctly, this is the film that opens up with the pendulum swinging. So there's a trap at the beginning of Saw 5, which is a very good one actually, one of the best traps, where a man's strapped to this like brace with his hands in this brace, and he's like led on this table, and there's a pendulum swinging above that's going to just slice him in half, and he's got to like break his fingers in this device in order to stop the pendulum. And he essentially does it, but then he still dies anyway, and the pendulum still cuts him up. And that's because Hoffman made this trap, and he made it in a way where you can't beat it. And the reason he did that is, I'm already forgetting parts of the story now, someone in his family, I think it's his wife, they were either murdered or harmed by this person. I want to say, or is his sister, I think. I think he had a sister, and his sister was harmed, if not murdered, by this particular man. So he took revenge by putting this man in this trap, which he could not win, and it killed him. But then you have this moment where the Jigsaw kind of teaches him a lesson about that and captures him. And that particular scene where they talk about, you know, the principles of why the Jigsaw puts them in the trap and why it's important to give them an avenue for redemption, that was a really interesting scene in an otherwise entertaining film that was, once again, like Saw 2, much more easier to follow in terms of the people caught up in the traps themselves, because you've got, it's almost like a game. And now that I think about it as well, the film Escape Room, there's a couple horror films called Escape Room. Those films that came out in recent years, they do follow the formula of Saw 5 in terms of having people like within what feels like an escape room, and then having these challenges to overcome, and with each challenge comes a new death and a new person gets wiped off the board. It's really got that kind of feel to it, which I think makes it quite engaging. Some of the traps in general aren't that, you know, they're not too flashy, they're not among the best of the franchise, you know, when following that group in that scenario, because you've only got like, you've got one where they got to get into the, find this key to get into this like little cage before the room explodes. You've got one where they have to kill someone and put them in a bathtub and attach these connectors to them to electrocute them to open a door. The last one is probably the best one actually, in terms of what those main group of people have to go through in the film, and that's where they got to like fill up 5 pints of blood, well 10 pints of blood, to get access to the exit, I believe. So they have to like put their hand into this device which will literally cut up their hand through the fingers and like drain their own blood, enough blood, 5 pints each, in order to survive. So there's an interesting concept within Saw 5. The traps themselves, like I said, aside from the opening one, which is the pendulum, aren't anything to write home about. But then it's where the narrative, although it's still kind of confusing, feels less confusing than the previous one and a little bit more interesting. So there's a lot that it makes Saw 5 worthwhile, in my opinion, and it's definitely one that I'd have up there in the franchise as a whole. Moving on to Saw 6, this film's very interesting to me because I wrote a blog back in 2017 ranking the Saw films before Jigsaw came out, and I did that on my old website that I used to run. And I opened that website and had a look at that website for the first time in years, just over the past couple weeks, and I saw that article there. Now, I didn't want to look in depth at what I had written about the Saw franchise because I wanted my opinion that I give you today to be fresh for how I feel right now, and I didn't want to feel any influence of any past decisions I made or anything like that. I just didn't want that in my subconscious. When I finished doing this review, I plan to read that article just out of curiosity to see how it aligns or doesn't align with my thoughts now, and just see what the difference is. I think that'll be quite interesting to see. But the one thing I did see when I briefly looked at it was I had Saw 6 at the bottom of the franchise. Now, bear in mind, this was before Jigsaw came out, so this was when the 3D film was literally the last film. And I had Saw 6 at the bottom, and I couldn't remember why, but I just remember that it was, I just saw it on the list that it was at the bottom. I was like, okay, so that was my least favorite at that time. Watching it now I know that this film is actually a bit of a fan favorite, and I hear a lot of people, a lot of fans, giving quite a bit of praise to Saw 6, and it's some people's favorite one, or among their favorites. For some reason, you know, even when I watched this a couple days ago, it's still not clicking with me, and it's still one of my least favorite ones in the franchise. For me, Saw 6 is where the franchise really started to feel like it was overstaying its welcome. The script seems obsessed with trying to tie everything together and make even the smallest of actions within the timeline relate to something else, and this attempt at constant connectivity was just detrimental to the film itself. It just felt like this franchise as a whole, from the very beginning, feels like you're going down this rabbit hole of plot threads and connecting plot points and things that don't connect, which suddenly two films later is going to connect just because they want to make it feel cohesive, even though it was never originally written to be that way. And this film feels like one of the most obvious examples of that, where everything that happens in the narrative, it just feels like, oh, you're changing that, or you're adding this kind of convenient thing in that you're playing as if it's a surprise and as if it's something that you knew all along, that you had planned out three films ahead, but you really didn't. You've just kind of found a way to make that kind of work, and that kind of lessens the impact of some of the drama and plot of this film for me. And it, to me, it's very forgettable. I watched it a few days ago. I couldn't tell you three scenes from this movie. I've already forgotten it. The opening trap, I remember. The opening trap of this film is with a woman and a man who have to cut off basically parts of their limbs, and whoever cuts off the heaviest amount is free. That's a memorable opening trap. But aside from that, I can't remember much else of the traps in this film, and I watched it a couple days ago. So yeah, Saw 6 isn't one of my favorites. It's not one that I think highly of, but it's not the worst in the franchise. Now, I'm going to give you a spoiler warning. Well, I've already given you plenty of spoiler warnings for the films throughout this review, but I'm going to give you a spoiler warning for my ranking list. Saw 3D, The Final Chapter, is the worst in the franchise. Let's talk about it. I remember the anticipation leading up to the release of Saw 3D, The Final Chapter. So I remember seeing set photos from the outdoor trap that would serve as the film's opening, hearing that it's supposed to be, you know, this final installment, and that it would capitalize on the stereoscopic 3D craze that went wild after the release of Avatar in 2009. As a young fan of the franchise at that point, I was excited to see how they'd conclude this franchise, and when I eventually saw it, I remember being disappointed at how bad it was. And having just watched it again a couple days ago, the climax of this film is even worse than I remember. That opening sequence is a good one. It pits two men caught up in a love triangle in a trap with the woman who has been playing them both. It's a scene that immediately grasps your attention and feels fitting for the end of the series, because it's like a very showpiece type of trap. It's set in broad daylight out in the middle of like a town, and it's like a very big, you know, situation that's going on, very graphic. The rest of the film, though, is a mess in a similar way to some of the worst that this franchise has to offer. It's not narratively engaging whatsoever, which is the opposite of how you'd want your franchise finale to feel. There's a couple of good traps, the opening, as I've previously mentioned, but the standout is a sequence involving the late Chester Bennington, may he rest in peace. His character in the film is a racist, and he has like a group of companions who are also racist, and he is glued to a car seat essentially and must force himself to detach from it, or else him and his three companions will get dispatched in grisly ways as a result of it. This trap comes quite early on in the film, and no other one in the film could match it. He fails to escape the trap, which results in the car that he sat in being dropped onto the head of the woman of the group as it then speeds off. And there's a man behind the car who's chained up to the car by his limbs, his jaw, and his arms. That gets ripped clean off when the car goes speeding. And then there's a guy chained up to the garage door who gets smashed when the car goes through it. And then Chester Bennington crashes into his car's on the outside of this garage and goes flying out the window. So, you know, obviously his back was like super glued to the chair. Gets hit with so much impact, it rips his back off and he goes flying out the windshield. It's a very grisly death, but it's like a four-way death. And to be honest, now that I think about it, you don't really get in this franchise, aside from the carousel, which actually, how could I forget that? The carousel is the main trap from the sixth film. I said I couldn't remember anything from it. That carousel death, trap sequence, very good trap sequence. That's a highlight of the franchise, and that was in the sixth film. Aside from that, you don't really get group traps that often in this franchise, but that one with Chester Bennington was a very good one. Now, of course, with this Saw film being in 3D, the film of course will throw things at the camera whenever it gets the opportunity to, although I do actually think they were a bit more restrained with it than I thought they would be, and I almost got to give them a bit of props to it, because they didn't launch things at you all the time when they easily could have. Visually though, this film is all over the place and often highly saturated, which I can only assume was done to make the shots more visible through the tinted lens of the 3D glasses. But regardless of that, the film looks ugly. Like, it really looks ugly. Really like high contrast, highly saturated picture, and it's inconsistent as well. The blood often looks pink, and I think that's because they were trying to like grade it in a way where it would look better through the 3D glass tint and not look too dark through the tint, but then when you watch it in 2D, it looks too bright. There's just a lot of issues with this film in terms of its narrative, in terms of its visuals, and the most egregious sin that Saw 3D The Final Chapter commits is its final 10 minutes, where it attempts to pull off a very cheap twist that ties into the first film. It does this via one of the returning characters, who is the doctor from the first film, the man who cut his foot off in the original movie, who was in that original trap. They bring him back only to try and have this film end in the same way as the original, which was already replicated during the end of Saw 2, and it's an insultingly bad ending that easily, in my opinion, ranks among the worst endings of all time for any franchise, because they tried to take the Saw franchise or what it became and then tie it up and make it go full circle by having the man that was in the trap from the original and escaped it put Hoffman in the same position and close that same damn bathroom door, man. Regurgitating the same idea, such a cheap and lazy ending to a franchise, especially, like I said, when they've already done that trick twice by having the ending of the second film replicate the first film. And then the fact that they like retcon the whole plot to the point where the Jigsaw like took that doctor out of the bathroom and nursed him back to good health and then had him on standby so that if the Jigsaw's wife was ever harmed, that he could then come into action. So like he was down with the Jigsaw and part of the plan all along. Like that ending's like a slap in the face, in all honesty. The film is not good. It's really bad, actually. Really bad. I'm glad they're actually making newer films now, because they couldn't have been, it would have been so difficult for a new film that you would make in this franchise to be worse than what this film was. And this film, this franchise, whilst it is inconsistent, didn't deserve to end on such a bad note. It's a really bad film. Saw 3D is definitely not worth watching. So in 2017, you had the release of Jigsaw, which was the first Saw film to come out within 7 years. And at the time, that film was billed as like a reboot of the franchise, but in actual fact, it's actually like a prequel. And you kind of like learn about one of the Jigsaw's first people that he brought under his wing. I remember at the time, I think I enjoyed this film quite a lot. And I think what that was the novelty of having a new Saw film come out. But also, like I said at the beginning of this episode, it was the first Saw film that I was able to watch at the cinema. So for someone that grew up with the films like I did, and that were, you know, had these films be as significant to me and my horror journey as a young teen as it was always going to be a significant moment for me to be then be able to sit in the cinema and watch it in a cinema. So I think that played a part into it. And I was younger, of course, so, you know, your tastes are different when you're younger. As you grow, you know, you start to like different things or like different aspects, and your opinions can just always change at any given moment. So, you know, you watch a film 1 year, 10 years time, you might think differently of it, and it's that kind of thing. It's watchable, but it's not that entertaining for me. And the twist of it all, I thought, was a bit weak. Whereas I think when I first watched it, I was probably more engaged with it and more impressed by what the film was doing overall. But this time around, I wasn't. And one thing that immediately kind of stuck in my mind when I started watching it, and this probably affected how I thought of it as well, the Jigsaw feels a lot like The Final Destination. Now, the Final Destination franchise is one of my favorite horror franchises, and that's another horror franchise that I watched very young, shared with friends, and we loved the deaths and the creativity of it. But when that 2009 3D Final Destination movie came out, which was called The Final Destination, supposedly the last in the franchise, even though they're now working on number 6 and a number 5 came out, which was a lot better. That film was a horrible film. I was so excited for The Final Destination when it came out, and I went to see that. I was very disappointed by it. It was a very bad film. And The Jigsaw feels a lot like The Final Destination to me, so that fourth film. It's a glossy sequel that is mostly shot within bright settings and doesn't capture the atmosphere of the rest of the franchise. And that's what The Final Destination did. You know, it was the fourth in that franchise. It was in 3D. The picture was very bright and vivid, and I think they did that because of the 3D. And everything about it just felt a bit too pristine and a bit too clean in terms of its visual look and just how it was presented. And that's exactly the same with the Jigsaw. It doesn't look like a Saw movie, but I don't necessarily mean that in a complimentary way, because it doesn't have that kind of grungy aesthetic that you expect with Saw. But then what it offers as an alternative just feels way too clean. This is particularly the case for this film in terms of how it looks. But one thing I'd say about the Saw films as a whole, especially when it comes to the narrative, you know, what really struck me when I watched them over the past week or so is the dialogue, the performances, the direction, the way it's shot, the look, the feel of a lot of the narrative moments in this franchise and scenes of dialogue reminds me of those like detective TV shows like Criminal Minds or NCIS. It feels like that. And it gives these films a quality as they progress on, where they feel less and less like films at times, and they feel like you're watching kind of a TV show, but like a low budget one, or like a criminal drama. And that's not a complimentary thing. I'm not saying that in any good way. There's no good spin that I'm putting on that. But that's just how I felt when I watched some of these films in the past week. I'm like, this feels so much like that type of television. And that's not a good thing. And The Jigsaw has a lot of kind of cartoony deaths. The traps aren't great at all in this film, actually. They're not good. So The Jigsaw, it was, like I said, on the time of its release, I enjoyed it. But looking back on it, I'm like, no, that wasn't that good. And I didn't enjoy it when I watched it the other day. And last but not least in the franchise, obviously prior to Saw 10, is Spiral, The Book of Saw, which came out in 2021. And that was then billed as a spin-off / reboot of Saw. It originated through Chris Rock having an idea for the Saw franchise and bringing that to the studio and them liking the idea and wanting to make it. So they went ahead with it. And essentially this film takes a lot of influence from 7. It's nowhere near as good as 7. Not many films are, but it definitely takes a visual influence from 7, and in terms of its narrative and how it follows like police detectives on the heels of a murder case, ongoing murders, investigating, you know, grisly crime scenes. It's got that whole thing going on with Chris Rock. Now, this was the first film I saw after the COVID lockdown in 2021. So it was the first time I was back at the cinema in a long time. First time I had been to the cinema that year in 2021. It's an interesting one because once again, I enjoyed this one quite a bit when I watched it the first time. And watching it this time, I didn't enjoy it as much. Now, sometimes I have to wonder, is that partially because, you know, watching a film of this nature for the first time is a wholly different experience to watching it when you remember parts of it or remember all of it, especially when it's got mystery going on. So maybe that could have been a factor. But what I would say about this film is I do like the direction it took with the whole police angle and the detective side of it, but I think it's very flawed in what it does. In hindsight, it's very predictable. For some reason, I didn't predict it when I watched it for the first time, I don't think I predicted who the killer was. But watching it a second time, you realise how formulaic the film actually is and how in plain sight and obvious it all is. And it's very generic in that sense. One thing I can give credit for in Spiral is the traps. I think, whilst not all of the traps are amazing, I think visually they all look really good and they're all directed very well. And there are some memorable ones. That opening trap on the train tracks where the man is strung up by his tongue and essentially drops off the stall and rips his tongue out and then gets hit by the train. That is brutal. Very brutal. And that felt very fitting for the Saw franchise. There's another one later on in the film with a man that's strung up and essentially glass bottles are being put into this machine, which then sends pieces of shattered glass flying out of this machine into this man who's hung up. And that was a very brutal one. I like that one a lot. And there's a few others peppered in throughout the film as well, which are pretty decent. But like I said, they all maintain a very good visual look. And I think the film's well lit, well shot, and the direction's pretty solid in it. But I think the story overall needed more work and more development. I think the characters aren't that interesting. And I liked Chris Rock in this film when I watched it for the first time. Having watched it the other day, I actually think he does a lot of overacting in this film. And it ruins his performance because he feels like he's doing too much. Feels like he's being too big, trying to be too bold of a character. And there's a lot of shouting, there's a lot of very stern eye movements, and I don't think his performance aged that well for me. You've got Samuel Jackson in this film as well. I thought he's great. I mean, when is Samuel Jackson not good? And you've got the underlying message, and I think the reason why this film actually, I enjoyed it more when I watched it for the first time, is you do have this message about police brutality and the injustice of police's behavior when they do bad things and how they get away with things and them not having any consequence. And I think that aspect of the story is an interesting idea and an interesting direction to go with, but I just don't think they executed it that well. I think they could have made it a lot better if they developed the story more, made the characters better, and didn't make the twist. And I know I said I didn't get it the first time I saw the film, but it is very obvious. I don't know, I was probably just caught up in it when I watched it for the first time, and that's why I didn't clock on. But the twist is very obvious in hindsight. And I think they could have just made a better film overall out of it, really. But I do, for its production values, for the traps, and the actual concept that it went with, and Samuel Jackson and Chris Rock. And like I said, I know Chris Rock overacted, but compared to some of the performances you get in this franchise, it's still a lot better than that. And that's why I think I rate Spiral higher than most people do, to be honest. But that's my review of the entire Saw franchise up until the end of Spiral. And like I said, I'm watching Saw 10 tonight. Can't wait to see it. You're about to hear my opinion on it in a moment, because we're going to get straight to that in a moment. But before we do that, let me just give my ranking of the Saw franchise at this point. So once I do see Saw 10, and once I give my review for that, which you'll hear in a moment, I will then rank the franchise again so you can see where Saw 10 aligns with my ranking. But my ranking as follows at this current time, having watched the Saw films over the past couple weeks. In last place, in the ninth position, I have Saw 3D. I don't need to say anything else about that. I've rattled on enough about why I don't like that film. In eighth place, I have Jigsaw. Seventh place, I have Saw 6. In sixth place, I have Saw 4. In fifth place, I have Spiral, The Book of Saw. Fourth place, I have Saw 3. Third place, I have Saw 5. Second place, I have Saw 2. And first place, I have Saw 1. So that's my rankings of the Saw franchise prior to watching Saw 10, and I'll leave that there. And the next portion of this episode that you'll hear is me giving my review for Saw 10 once I've seen it. I've now seen Saw 10, watched that last night, I've slept on it, let's talk about it. Saw 10 follows John Kramer as he travels to Mexico for a medical procedure that's kind of off the grid. It's some new procedure that's supposedly done to cure cancer, and he's gone there with the hopes that it will extend his life. Obviously, if you've seen any other Saw film, you know that didn't work, it wasn't successful. Turns out these people are con artists, so once he realizes that, we have a new game to play with new people in traps. Now, I remember when they announced Saw 10, and I thought to myself, here we go again. Like, what else are they going to do with this franchise? Because by that point, we had had Jigsaw in 2017. And then we just had Spiral, which was supposed to start its own kind of section of the franchise, really. And because that film wasn't received well enough, I don't know if that film was a success at the box office, actually, because it came out during COVID. But because it wasn't received well enough, that wasn't going anywhere. And of course, the studio wanted to use the license in some way. So they thought, you know what, let's bring back Tobin Bell and make another Saw movie. And when I heard that it was going to be a film that was set between 1 and 2, it kind of intrigued me. But then it also made me think, are they just doing this to make an excuse to just make another movie? You know, is this going to be another like part of the Saw canon that's just unnecessarily convoluted and just a new puzzle piece that doesn't really fit in with the rest of it? Because that's what some of this franchise feels like, is they get to a point where they make so many different changes and retcons to the plot and add so much more to it. It feels like they're just making things up just to try and fit something in. An example of that is Jigsaw, which I don't like how that fits into the timeline. And in my own headcanon, Jigsaw, that film doesn't really exist, because that is the prequel of the whole franchise, really, with the Jigsaw working with his very first apprentice. Doesn't really work for me in terms of thinking of the whole timeline. The good news is Saw 10 is actually really good. And the first thing I want to say is the director of this film, his name's Kevin, I forgot his surname. He directed Saw 6 and he directed Saw 3D, The Final Chapter. This is his redemption arc reaching its conclusion because he went from, in my opinion, making two of the worst films in the franchise to making one of the best films in the franchise with Saw 10. Let me talk about why. This story is quite interesting. Now, what I like about this film a lot is the film begins with a really steady pace in its first act as it establishes the characters and the actions that will lead to what occurs in the rest of the film. And it's a refreshing change for a mainline Saw film to take its time like this. Even Spiral wasn't this slow with its pacing. It never felt too slow or dull, and my attention was transfixed on the screen the whole time, and I was invested, even in the slower parts. And I really appreciate about this film, because they really did take a different approach, and I think it added something new to the franchise that we hadn't really experienced with these films and how they're actually directed and how they're presented to us. The story itself really adds more dimensions to John Kramer and Amanda, actually, who, and I think what they do with these two characters in this film will retroactively improve elements of their relationship in previous films upon a rewatch. And what we get of their master and apprentice style relationship expands upon their code of conduct, their morality, the reasons for it, and the connection they feel towards each other, but also the connection they feel towards the people they test. And that in itself is put to the test during the film's final act in ways we haven't seen before in this franchise. Saw 10 humanizes John Kramer more than any other film has, and that relationship with Amanda and that dynamic and how it's portrayed in this film will be satisfying to witness for longtime fans of the franchise. It got to a point where, as you're watching this film, you start to root for Jigsaw and Amanda. So when you see what John has to go through, how that affects him, and you understand, of course, because he has his code of principles, why he's doing what he's doing, you see how he was wronged and you see how he reacts to it, and you start to you almost root for him in this situation of him deploying these traps on these people, because you feel like they deserve it in some way because of how they've wronged him. When it comes to Amanda, her portrayal in this film, it's made me appreciate that character even more than I already did. It's made me like that character more than I already did. And I think we got another side to her. Like, we've seen her, obviously, plenty of times before, working on behalf of the Jigsaw. But I don't think we've really seen her like this, because we really get to see that partnership flourish in some ways that we haven't seen before. But then also, the spotlight is put on Amanda in a very different way to what we've seen before. Because when I think back to the original movies, whenever we see her with the pig mask, it's very quick moments, really, most of the time. Whereas in this film, there's a whole sequence involving Amanda and the pig mask. And that whole sequence felt like a slasher scene that you could find in a Halloween film, but it was with her instead. And I think that would be a very crowd-pleasing moment, especially for fans of Amanda, because it was really satisfying for her to have the spotlight like that, as we see more of what she was doing around that time for John and getting more of a deeper look at it. In terms of the direction, I was quite impressed. I thought the film looked very good and it maintained the aesthetic and feel of Saw. So for example, when Jigsaw came out, one of my criticisms of that film, and as I've said in this episode, is that the film looks a bit too clean, it looks a bit too glossy and pristine, and it doesn't have that aesthetic you expect from Saw. Whereas this film maintains that aesthetic, but it also blends it. In the first act, you kind of do get a bit more of that cleaner look, if you will, but not to the degree of Jigsaw, where it just looks like a studio-produced movie. It still looks like a movie set within the Saw world, but you're seeing much more kind of the environment. You're seeing much more of these kind of locations that are a bit more remote and different to what you see in the franchise before, because the film is set in Mexico. But then when it gets to the nitty-gritty stuff of the film, you get that classic Saw look, that classic Saw feel. The editing, I think, was quite restrained in this film in a good way. You do get some of those kind of quick flash shots and those kind of frantic camera movements that you expect from Saw. You do get it, but it's much more restrained, and I think I prefer that because it's much more effective when it then does happen. So this kind of leads into what I said about the director doing a good job, I think, with this film, and the editor and the cinematographer. Another thing I appreciate about Saw 10 is it doesn't overuse the iconic aspects of the franchise, nor does it rely on them too heavily, and I think that's a very good thing. It stands on its own in that sense. Billy the Puppet gets very little screen time, but when he does, it's a crowd-pleasing moment. How could it not be? It's a moment. And the way it's actually shot, that sequence actually is really good, because there's no music playing in the scene when Billy the Puppet shows up, and you just hear the sound of the bike as it's wheeling out towards the people. And I think that adds to the atmosphere of the scene in a very good way. Another example is the main theme. The main theme is, of course, reserved for the most impactful moment of the film, narrative-wise, and I think that works to its benefit. And the pig mask, as I've already mentioned, is mostly kept to one sequence, and although you do see it a few times within that sequence, it's a very focused sequence that has like a real purpose and a real thing that it's trying to display, where it literally just focuses all on Amanda in that one scene and what she's doing, and I think that works to the film's benefit as well. But let's talk about the traps. Less is more. Quality over quantity is the approach with the traps this time round, and they deliver. It's as simple as that. There is only a few of them. But what I will say is, due to the drama of the story, it manages to create a sense of suspense that kind of permeates throughout most of the second half of the film, even when the traps aren't actually going on. And the actual setup of it is quite interesting as well, because in this film, you have Jigsaw in a location with a bunch of people, handful of people, chained up essentially, ready to be involved with these traps. And the Jigsaw's there, and Amanda's there to witness it firsthand. And I don't think that type of dynamic we've seen much, if at all, in the franchise previously, where you've literally got the Jigsaw watching and witnessing these traps unfold, a series of traps unfold in one location, and him being there to witness it and kind of react to it. So that brings like a different dimension to it. But in terms of the traps themselves, they are gruesome. The first main trap, I'll say, so of course every Saw film tends to open with a trap. You do get kind of an opening trap in this film. The first trap after that in the film is an all-timer for the franchise for me, because it blends suspense and the graphic violence in such a great way, and is shot well, is paced well, and it really builds to this crescendo of a moment that has a real good visual payoff. And I think that has like all the elements of what makes a good Saw trap. So the first main trap you see in this film, I think, is one of the best in the franchise, and it really stands out. And the aftermath of that trap really stands out for multiple reasons, and I really did enjoy that sequence. And watching that sequence on the cinema screen, it just felt like, okay, this is Saw. Like, this really feels like Saw. Some of the other traps are really good as well. They all do a good job of making you put yourself in that situation and trying to imagine how you try to get out of it. And that kind of amplifies a kind of fear or disgust at what you're watching, trying to think of how you would get out of that situation. The makeup effects and all the gore, that's really good. It looks very believable. And even just the shots of graphic violence in this film are actually, it's quite substantial. Now, obviously, I watch a lot of horror films, so I'm kind of used to it, so I'm a bit desensitized, so I can watch some graphic stuff and not have that much of a reaction to it in these type of films, because I'm just used to it, and other fans of Saw will be the kind of same. But for those of you that are kind of squeamish when it comes to like body parts and blood and things like that, you may have a hard time with this, because it is, like I said, there's not as many traps as you may expect, but the ones that you do get, it does get pretty graphic. And like I said, that main one that I'm talking about is very graphic, and it got to the point where I did start to think in my head, I wonder what they're doing in terms of editing here to get the 18 rating, because I think they were probably very close from going from an R rating to an NC-17 rating, which is obviously what they don't want. And I think the film probably was really close to that, because I feel like if there was a couple extra scenes showing the injury, or a couple extra seconds of shots where it shows the detail of the injuries that are being inflicted on these people, I feel like it could have become above an R rating, above an 18 rating, and just not get a rating. I'm intrigued to hear, like, if the director ever talks about that in future, what they did in terms of the editing to keep that R rating / 18 rating, because I think they were very close to going above it. If I were to give any negatives to this film, I'll just say that the final act was a little predictable. I was able to kind of pinpoint and spot where certain twists were going to happen, and they ended up happening. It didn't really ruin my experience with the film overall, though. I still really enjoyed my time with it, but I just think the ending wasn't as out of left field and surprising as I think they would have wanted it to be. That being said, I think they do a lot of things different in the third act. So although parts of it were predictable, there are some things they do and some elements that they bring into the third act that are unlike things we've seen in the franchise thus far. And I think that was really good. That not only was that really good, they found a way, because of course, if you're a Saw fan, you know that John Kramer is going to survive in this film, because he's in the other movies. They did a good job of putting him in situations in this film where you may feel a sense of peril for his well-being, but of course, because you know that he's going to survive, they throw in another element into the scene that makes you invested in the survival of something. So it's like they understood that they couldn't fully maximize your investment in terms of wondering whether Jigsaw would survive or not, because you know he does. So they put something else in there to get that feeling out of you, and that's the most I can say whilst keeping it spoiler free. But I thought that was a nice touch, because that helped keep your investment in the scenario that occurs towards the end of this film in terms of which way it's going to go. Overall, Saw 10 is a success. It's better than any 10th installment in any horror franchise has any right to be. And yeah, when they announced it, I thought, oh, this isn't going to be that great. You know, I didn't think too highly of the idea of making another Saw film. But what they've actually done is created a film and added a new puzzle piece to the timeline of the Saw franchise that actually doesn't feel convoluted and actually feels like a welcome puzzle piece that doesn't harm what's come before in any way, or feel like it's just tacked on like some of the other elements of this franchise, like Jigsaw, for example. So I think the film deserves a lot of credit for that, because it expands and adds new dimensions to the main characters of John Kramer and Amanda, but it doesn't do it at the detriment of the rest of the franchise and what's come before. That deserves a lot of praise, and I highly recommend you watch this in the cinema with a crowd. It's a great time. I found myself glued to the screen, really transfixed on it, really immersed within the experience, and it was a fun time seeing this franchise return in this way and be very good at the same time with this installment. And yeah, that's my thoughts on Saw 10. Now, where does it fit within my ranking? So of course, I ranked the Saw films earlier in this episode prior to watching Saw 10, and it's quite easy for me, if I'm being completely honest with you, to you know, I was pretty certain when I watched the movie where it was going to be in my ranking, where it would fall. And so if I just go through my ranking of the Saw franchise again, we'll see where it lands. So at the bottom of my ranking, in 10th place, I have Saw 3D The Final Chapter. In 9th place, I have Jigsaw. 8th place, I have Saw 6. 7th place, I have Saw 4. 6th place, I have Spiral, The Book of Saw. In 5th place, I have Saw 3. 4th place, I have Saw 5. 3rd place, I have Saw 2. And in 2nd place, I have Saw 10, and in the number one spot, I have the original Saw film. So Saw 10 immediately clears the rest of the franchise. In my opinion, it's the best sequel in the franchise. There's a lot of reasons for that. and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think any Saw fan that watches this film will have a good time. But that's my thoughts on the Saw franchise as a whole, including Saw 10. Thank you for listening to this episode. Whether you listen to the whole thing in its entirety or in different parts, it's all appreciated in equal measure. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to follow this podcast on your respective platform so you don't miss any future episodes. And please share this episode as well. That'll help me out a lot. And also add a rating on your respective platform for this podcast, preferably 5 stars. That'll help me out. Thank you for listening. I'll speak to you guys in the next episode.